It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you back into the podcast. And thank you so much for sharing this with so many. We have become one of the most listened to podcasts in the mortgage space, and it's because of what you have done to share it with others and your colleagues. So I want to say a big thank you to you for being here and for sharing this podcast. It's Monday, November 16th of 2020. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. I'm really excited today for our hot topic. We're continuing down the series of what's going on with improving and increasing productivity of our underwriters. We're all paying them a lot more money these days. So are we getting all that we can for this increased investment? We're going to have Frank Poise coming on. He's Managing Director of Product Development for Black Knight. He's here to talk about the digital mortgage user experience, the need to go hand in hand in improving underwriting, creating satisfied customers and borrowers, and they've got some great tools. So we're really looking forward to having Frank on. So be sure to stay tuned to the Hot Topic segment. And you'll be very pleased that you did. I want to say a special thank you to the Industry Syndicate. We're so glad to be part of that. IndustrySyndicate.com, as well as Mortgage Media for all the latest podcasts. Also, Indicom has partnered with a company called Form Free to introduce their business health check. And so be sure to check all of that out. Go to their website. Press release is on our website to learn more about that. Also, a special thank you to our sponsors, starting with the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. So be sure to get Mortgage Action Alliance app to your device. It's so important that you have that. By the way, you do not need to be a member of the MBA to have your voice heard. Of course, you should be a member of the MBA. I tell that all the time. So hope you'll be signing up to become a member if you're not. Also, to Finastra, who's a mortgage bot solution product. We're grateful to have them as a sponsor. They do a great job out there. I just saw a note as Finastra, they had a major announcement coming out that Christian Investors Financial selected Finastra. They're providing for their technology solutions. So congratulations on that major sale. We also want to say thank you to Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative for very solid, excellent two co-ops. And by the way, Black Knight is a part of both of these organizations, and I get to see our friends at Black Knight at every one of these. You need to look into these two co-ops, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative. They create meaningful connections between the lenders and vendors, as well as really talking about what's going on. We're going to have Tom Gallucci on with the Mortgage Collaborative talking here soon. And also the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, grateful for them, as well as Indicom and our partnership with Indicom and all that they do. So go back and listen to the podcast we did with them recently, as well as Incelerate. Josh at Incelerate does so much to help create an engaging experience for the borrower, as well as Ainsworth Advisors, as well as AI Assist, Celebrity Home Loans, Innovient. Talking about Innovient, Ted Kramer, gotta go check out what those guys do. Probably one of the most impressive business intelligence BI tools out there when it comes to setting prices. You just cannot set prices intelligently in this dynamic world without using a tool like Innovient. Be sure to check it out. Also, Knowledge Coop, which is a great training tool, Mobility RE, as well as Modex. Both of these companies help you in your recruiting, finding out what's going on with the fellows. Are they really top producers? Both of these companies have the business intelligence tool. A must have. And I'd recommend you have both of them because they're a nice complement to each other. Also, Velma is a great way of getting your messaging out. We use them constantly, as well as VendorSurf and Vidyard. Also, finally, special thank you to Alice, Allen, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get an update from Rob Van Raphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last Friday, HUD released its annual report on the financial condition of the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. The overall capital ratio increased to 6.1% from 4.84% a year ago. This reflects the impact of significant home price appreciation on the actuarial model and recent risk management initiatives by FHA. While the capital ratio now sits well above its statutory minimum of 2%, FHA did note several concerns. They are the rising delinquencies associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, economic and policy uncertainty, and the additional resources needed for the MIF fund to withstand a stress event similar to that of the Great Recession. Also last week, FHFA announced it would extend GSE origination flexibilities and a temporary policy allowing them to purchase qualified loans in forbearance through December 31st, 2020. The flexibilities include temporary policies related to appraisals, employment verification, and power of attorney, which allow transactions to occur in a safe manner that avoids person-to-person contact whenever possible. The GSE's purchase of early payment forbearance loans, while still subject to price adjustments, has been an important source of liquidity for lenders. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
They do a great job. And so pleased to have a partnership with them as meaningful and deep as we do. Check out again, Mortgage Action Alliance. I'll be asking you again. Check it out. Got to have that app. Sure your voice is heard on the Hill. Man, it's so important. Les Parker is here with this week's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les?
In trade, we must contest that China's getting the best of us.
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Big media, big business, and big tech. They're so big they get their own big. Want to surrender to China's economic power while the middle class loses big time. Powerful elitists think they can tame the dragon and make lots of dinero. The Chinese Communist Party makes a bad trading partner because it wants global power more than big tech. Long-term, freedom loses. But near-term, China and elitists partner to get an economic boost. Couple it with Trump's pro-jobs policies already in place, and inflation wins. Are borrowers getting the best of you? These are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Les Parker, check out the TM Spotlight and subscribe to Les's newsletter. You can follow it and also subscribe to it. But if you put in the word power, you will then get that newsletter, the paid version, for free. So appreciate that very much. Matt Graham, so good to have you here in the market. Big question, is this the week the 10-year crosses back the percent mark? So good to have you here. Matt, by the way, I tell everybody that Matt has got some of the greatest technology from where the markets are at. Has mbslive.net. Check it out. And thrilled to have you here. What's up?
Hey, Dave. How's it going? Oh. Yeah. So 1% 10-year yields. We haven't gotten there yet. We got very close last week. And unlike the previous week, which was defined by politics, last week was really defined by the revelation of Pfizer's vaccine trial results. And I think we had a chance to talk about this in last week's show because the news was out at 6:45 a.m. Eastern time. And those losses didn't get much worse over the next 2 days. And that was encouraging. And that's the thing that sort of casts some doubt as to where bonds are going next, because 10-year yields rose to 0.97 and change, putting them roughly in line with the highs seen back in June. And taken together, this is one of those double tops that technicians might talk about, only it's far too soon to conclude that is what we're seeing, because it could fit in terms of that double top viewpoint, but it could also simply be another stop on the way up. Mm-hmm. Why would we continue to go up? I think, again, to reiterate something from last week, and I'm not saying this is what's happening, but if you're going to make a case for it happening, you would say, if we're talking about the bond market, we're talking about traders needing to price in growth and inflation over a 10-year time frame. And while the upcoming year may be pretty rocky for a variety of reasons, what comes after that is anyone's guess. And if we're bringing these vaccines into the mix and saying that they're going to help restore at least some semblance of normalcy, then we have to wonder if a 10-year yield under 1% is too low. Because think about where we were last year before, let's say, the trade war stuff started. And that seems like a world away right now. And then add COVID to that and you know the rest. But anyway, talk a little bit more about that in a second. Last week, again, all about the vaccine reaction and then a little bit of technical support that gave us some hope heading into the weekend. Also heading into the weekend, we had a little bit of trepidation because we knew that Moderna would be announcing their trial results any day now. And it turns out they announced at exactly the same time of day as Pfizer did. So 6:45 a.m. this morning. And I'm personally shocked, Dave. We might have some evidence of supportive overtones, undertones, some kind of tones that are supportive in the bond market. And I think stocks are also telling a somewhat similar story. They're back down to the levels they were before the vaccine news came out. So it does happen from time to time, despite what you may have heard. But I don't really know what to make of this right now. It remains to be seen. I think what we could say is that the trial results suggest things will eventually get a lot better in terms of COVID. We know that. Think of it like planting a tree, and you weren't sure if the tree was going to make it. Now the tree is alive. We can see that. And it looks like it's going to bear fruit by the end of next year. And that's great. Fruit is coming. But that's a year from now. And in the meantime, winter is coming, both literally and figuratively. And if we don't have to worry as much about a vaccine, we can spend a lot more time and energy worrying about what happens between now and next year. So case counts are surging pretty much everywhere. It's not a U.S. thing. It's everywhere. And obviously bad here. It's double the surge we had that scared us so much in July. That things could get worse before they get better. And that brings along two big concerns. Number one, what will lockdowns do to the economy between now and whenever this surge abates? So that's immediate, actual, tangible economic damage. And then there is the longer term concern about what will the permanent effects look like. So we can see that our fruit bearing tree is going to potentially usher in a world where COVID becomes like the measles in terms of incidence. But what's the economy going to look like once that happens?
Right.
And you hear a lot of speculation about permanent changes. So there's reason to worry, and that worry is maybe helping bonds find their footing. Data this week, here's what we got. Tomorrow, retail sales is the biggie, and that is forecast to come down a bit from last month's 1.9 to be at 0.5 this month. Home builders have home builder confidence. 85 versus 85 is the expectation, and that is the highest in, I think, 14 years. I have to take a look, or all-time high, perhaps, in terms of their survey. And then housing starts, building permits expected to stay high, not quite as high as late 2019, but roughly in line with post-COVID highs, which have been stellar. And on Thursday, Philly Fed expected to come down, but remains strong at 22 versus 32.3 previously. No major change expected in jobless claims, and existing home sales expected to come down just a little bit, but from quite stellar levels in the mid 6 million range. And that's data for the week.
Data, yeah. One of the things I love about your website is how much you have packed into one page. So I have one place I could go. And if I want to get up on a story, like, for example, the CNBC story that you released at 12:11 Eastern time talking about the vaccine, it's all right here. So when a story pops up, I can click on it and look at it. There's so many reasons I love this service. It's got all the information you need to have to keep on top of things. You got to get a flavor in the MBS live chat, see what people are saying, what's happening, but it's all packed into one really great screen. So if there's one screen you want to have, get this service, folks. It is really great. So,
don't forget your Licking on Lending discount.
Oh, yeah.
Coupon code screen, and you type in LOL, and that'll double your free time and streamline the process. No credit card needed or anything like that.
But they should put their credit card in there and just sign up for it. Yes. Appreciate you so much, friend.
Will do. You too, Dave.
All right, friend. Alice Alvey is here. Alice Alvey is CMB, Vice President Education Training, and one of the bright spots in a very bright company. Alice, good to have you here with this week's legislative update. What you got?
Hi, Dave. Hi, everybody. I was just going to keep things short so we can get to our big discussion with our special guest today. And I wanted to just elaborate for folks on what Rob Van Ritt had just reported on, and that was the mutual mortgage insurance fund capital ratio being reported for this year at 6.1%. Usually, if you're in sales, you go, wow, 6.1%, and it only needs to be at 2. When are premiums going to go down? A lot of times in sales, you get super excited when the fund gets flush with cash because you go, okay, can FHA now take a look at this and consider reducing mortgage insurance premiums? And I can give you a very emphatic, stop thinking like that, it isn't going to happen. Because what we're really looking at is, even though that number is very high, and as MBA reported, it hasn't been this high since 2007, think about what happened after 2007, right? If you're from Detroit, it all started in 2005, but you get the drift. Right after that was the Great Recession. And that capital ratio evaporated quickly for FHA. And right now we have a lot of things on the horizon. We know that forbearances are high. We also know that our serious delinquency rate right now is sitting at over 11.5%. And when you took a two-year look back between 2009 back to 2007, it was hitting 12% and higher. So we are already hitting those delinquency rates without the benefit of a look back, and seriously delinquent, I should say. So we're already seeing that serious delinquency rate being extremely high, knowing that going forward, it's going to continue to rise. Crisis will continue. We'll have to watch very carefully. So don't expect any change in mortgage insurance premium. The fund, when they do these numbers, is very much dependent on the house prices. And so I think Rob might have mentioned this, but in the MBA summary, they let you know that all it takes is a 1% change in their projections in house price appreciation. And this capital ratio dropped very quickly down to below 5%. And it'll keep dropping even faster with different types of stress testing that would happen to house prices. So some markets are good, but we know we just have to be cautious. It sounds like a good news piece, but there's definitely a black cloud looming right next to it that we're watching very closely. So that's my report for today, Dave. I'll kick it back to you.
Good. Got to give a shout out to a mutual friend, David Lord. He is listening to the podcast today. And David is such a good guy, but you've introduced me to so many wonderful people. And I value our friendship, Alice, and all of the quality people up in your area that are in the mortgage industry making such a huge contribution.
If he's listening, yes, he is a great consultant. He worked with us on a couple projects, and that was great. So glad he's listening. Glad he's doing well.
He is doing well. So good. Appreciate it, Alice. Let's get over to Alan Pollock. He's here with us with this week's weekly tech update. What you have for us, Alan?
Hey there, good afternoon, and all kinds of fun stuff. We're going to finally get to what to do with the rest of this year as well. First, David, ICE Mortgage Technology, that's a name we need to get more familiar with. They just released version 20.2. That's Ellie Mae, by the way. So Ellie Mae version 20.2. And the reason I mention this is because, one, it's very interesting to hear the name ICE Mortgage Technology. I think throughout 2021, we're going to hear a lot of that. And this release focuses on what it should be, most of us are hoping, which is all more automation, efficient and collaborative workflows, and support of their brand new hybrid e-close platform. Those are their words, but very interesting. We need this automation right now. We need these efficient workflows. We've talked the talk and walked the walk, right? All these years of talking about all the AI and all the great machine learning we've done, now's the time to make all these things work. So if you're an Ellie Mae user, you want to check that out. IPOs, David, valuations, how about $12 to $15 billion in valuation? I'd like a small percentage of that. Well, Loan Depot is going to go for their IPO again. If you remember, they had a false start back in 2015. Yeah. They've got their eyes on that $15 billion valuation. Another big company, so $200 million at a $4 billion valuation is Better.com. They just raised another $200 million. If you remember, they launched in 2016. They said they're going to change the digital mortgage process. They revolutionize it with the pre-approval process being extremely streamlined. They did in January of 2019 about $70 million in their Series C. And so they just raised $200 million more, which just shows that audience that they're able to capture, the process they're able to implement, and the technology platform that they've leveraged to do and continue to expand upon continues to be an integral part of the housing market period. So this is really interesting. David, this other company I want to talk about real quick, Brace. We've talked about them in the past. They're servicing technology. With the pandemic, their business just completely boomed. It's super important to be able to better provide customer service when you're dealing with deferments, education to borrowers, how to handle long-term issues like defaults or managing forbearance. Their technology platform does that. They raised $15 million back in March. I mentioned Brace because we're talking about more shutdowns. I'm not. Other people are, but nobody wants these shutdowns, of course, but they will have an impact on people being able to work, customer service, people making their mortgage payments. And so if you're a lender and you feel like you haven't looked at servicing technology and Brace is within your realm of technology vendors, you want to take a look at them. So it's BRACE.com. David, it's funny. I was watching TV last night and something came on that struck me, and it talks about how we didn't choose to accelerate technology and the digital adoption. We were forced to do it based on 2020. And we must have agility, we must have empathy, and we didn't do it by chance. Capital One just abandoned their last data center and went completely to the cloud. And
wow.
I mention that because, and I tie the two together because we are now in an environment where we need to be able to be more agile. We need to have more empathy. We can't do that if we're fighting fires all the time and we've got heavy infrastructure and systems. So we have to be smarter in the vendors we choose and the processes we choose. So when you look at what Capital One just did, they've gone completely to the cloud. Not only are there all the right security measures and mechanisms in place, but they've been able to offload the thing that many people hold very close to them, which is their infrastructure, their security. And they've been able to find the right partner. And not only does that lower their total cost of ownership of technology and the depreciation of it, but allows them to take that money and redirect it and innovate and hire the right people or reuse those folks. So I mention that because it really is just so close to home for our industry. And David, the news was so exciting. I do want to quickly cover what to do with the rest of the year if you follow this method or want to. It's called the Moscow method, M-O-S-C-O-W, just like Moscow. And it's four things. It's called must have, should have, could have, and won't have. Most developers all like to take the must have basically means that you must have it. There's no option. There's no other way to look at it. Should have means it's important, but it's not necessary. You can do without it. So the must haves are first. Could have means it's desirable, but it's really not necessary. And desire is not as important as we should have it to meet our customer demand, or we must have it to sustain a product or a service. And the last is won't have, which is when it hasn't been agreed by all the critical stakeholders and it has the lowest payback, right? It needs more valuation. It needs more discovery. And a lot of times the won't have is when the CEO or sales is tied directly to a development team and they say, I must have this or I need this, right? Those are things that are shot off the bow. And those are things that you won't have because they don't fit into could, should, or must, and they need more validation. So check it out online. It's called the Moscow Method. Be more than happy to answer any email questions you have. You can reach me at Alan, A-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. Moscow Method does work, and you must have this podcast. So thank you for being our listener and looking forward to our live segment coming up.
Yeah, looking forward to it very much. Looking forward to you participating. You've got someone who's a friend of yours on here, so value your contribution as well as everyone's each and every week. Folks, that wraps up the regular market update. Now we transition into the hot topic. If you're listening live, just stay right here. We move right on. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, the next podcast is what we're about ready to get into. Be sure to catch it and listen to it all the way through. Let's get started on this week's Hot Topics segment. We've got Frank Poise joining us. He is Managing Director of Product Strategy, Origination Technologies at Black Knight, Inc. So it's good to have you here with us, Frank. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be here.
Good afternoon, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm so impressed with who they hire and how you all think. And it shows up in the acquisitions, the companies you're acquiring. But we're talking about underwriting and what we could do to improve the overall underwriting experience, greater ROI out of the increased investment we're making to underwriters. So you have an impressive background. Can you talk a little bit about your unique experience as it relates to underwriting? Tell us a little bit about yourself and the journey.
Sure. You and I have both been around the business long enough to remember the days when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were introducing DU and LP.
Oh, yeah?
I was a chief lending officer back in the day, and we were running a pretty good-sized mortgage business for our portfolio. And that transition was incredible. We were amazed at the improvement in underwriter productivity. And we're certainly relieved about the benefits in terms of risk and our reps and warrants relief associated with the UNLP. Now, we both also remember that if you fast forward, 15 years, not much incrementally happened. It was pretty much a long period of time where technology wandered back and forth from the internet bubble to then wandering into the crisis. And over the last 10 years, though, I've started to really see an acceleration of attention to technology and its ability to deliver true improvement in the industry. And so as a consultant for about 5.5 years, I visited many of our colleagues, hopefully some of you are on the podcast today listening. We've seen not only the quote day one certainty and other alternatives for doing verifications come along, but we've also seen the birth of MISMO, the growth of MISMO as a standard.
Yeah.
And we're all paying attention now to data in ways that we didn't before. And of course, everything about the data turns into all that underwriters have at their disposal in order to make a decision. So between being in the eligibility business back about 15 years ago to being in ops for a very large mortgage banker to my consulting time, and then most recently at Analytics, working with Rob Kessel and his team, helping to grow that business just before the Black Knight acquisition. I've been seeing how digital decisioning, even if it's just helping loan officers to decide which product to offer, was starting to come into its own. And when Rich Gagliano asked me to join him at Black Knight during the Compass acquisition, I was ecstatic because this is my dream job. And I'm really pleased to be able to be here to talk about how exciting things are going to be in the next few years for our industry.
And the best part about having you on the podcast is you've been in the industry just a few months longer than I have. It's good to see a veteran in the industry here. Underwriting is a key to evaluating and minimizing the risk involved with originating a loan. And we all know it's one of the most critical components, Frank, in the entire process. But let's get specific. What is really at stake here? How do you guys see it?
I consider underwriting to be a fulcrum for risk. It embodies operational credit and financial risk altogether. Operationally, that's what people mostly think about. It's very expensive. We get 2 underwrites a day. They're the most expensive employees besides salespeople. And they really do very much drive the cost equation at mortgage banks. But the truth is that credit is really what they're all about, of course. And you have underwriting background. So that decisioning part is not only crucial to our industry now and in the future, but it comes into play in a lot of different ways. And let's face it, poor underwriting means I've got repurchase risk, or if I'm a banker, I've got portfolio risk. And then financially, everybody knows what happens to execution if you have a repurchase and what your cost changes to if you've got underwriting problems along the way that stretch out the pipeline. And not to mention the financial, operational, and credit risk associated with giving poor customer service as it relates to making decisions poorly or slowly. But we're also led by agencies and investors. The truth is the industry is driven by the requirements that we have. And so as individual mortgage bankers, we can only manage the risk to a point and then have to manage the changes that come at us from the outside world. So coming up with a really good efficiency improvement program is really something the industry has to work on. You know, investors accepting new standards and new capabilities, driving them as the agencies have been. And also understanding that underwriters have a place at the table that's not only critically important to independent mortgage bankers, but it's even more important to bankers who might be running portfolios or providing services to their private banking customers.
And you start looking at the inherent risks in there and the costs associated with underwriting. Any thoughts on the best way to approach this challenge?
Your last 2 podcasts were excellent. Between Joe and Brent, you got a really great slice of how the technology improvements, especially in terms of automation, are going to help underwriting to be more efficient. And of course, we at Black Knight are attacking that problem. We have a product that we're working on that we are getting ready to release that provides a lot of automation improvements. We've got our AI platform. We've got a number of new technologies that are addressing the workflow problem inside of your LOS and inside of your operation. What I'd like to talk about here is the fact that we've got a challenge that goes beyond the digital. The foreseeable future, we're convinced that we're still going to have a mix of the analog and the digital for the foreseeable future. So just as we have hybrid e-closes, just as some consumers are not willing to do digital, the fact is there are aspects of the process that are going to require analog work, and we need to make sure we tune up for that. We provide tooling in our office environments and in our remote environments in order to make sure that underwriting is efficient, and exactly how that happens is where we're focusing a lot of our energy right now, and that is in defining a really solid underwriter experience.
Yeah, Alice, you've been in this industry and underwriter as I have, and deep experience. Any questions that you have for Frank as we listen to this?
Yes. Hi, Frank. I'm an old timer too. Remember carbon paper and PMI Aura. So my question, I guess, is you mentioned this mix of digital and analog, which I think a lot of lenders are trying to cope with right now as the capacity jumped so quickly. So I think we get that we're going to have a little bit of analog, but I'd love to hear more about what do you see we can make more digital? What are some of the things that people might not think of that could be digital for underwriting?
So the key is turning the analog into digital to the extent possible, and then using the digital manifestation of those things to drive a user experience that's going to improve productivity and job satisfaction for underwriters. Again, I think we heard a lot about what Brent is doing in terms of helping in the verification space and what Joe and Black Knight are doing in order to digitize the process. So of course, turning paper into data is critically important. I think one of the things that's often missed is the fact that we have a need for a combination of infrastructures to support that user experience that includes AI, but also includes deterministic logic. So the combination of business rules and AI-based kind of fuzzy decisions that are necessary in order to keep this process moving forward and to creating that richer mortgage underwriter experience, it really demands both of those things. And one of the things that we're working on really hard is finding the right balance of the two and applying the right tool to the right problem. So it's not true that AI solves everything, and it's not true that workflow solves everything, and it's not true that simply having good business rules in the underlying systems is going to solve the problem. We need to orchestrate all of that to create a process that supports, yes, task-based workflow, as Joe mentioned. Yes, we have to support the digitization from outside of our companies that's going to provide really solid and agency and investor accepted answers. But really, the truth is, without coming up with a good way to show that to an underwriter, a good way to orchestrate the process so that we step through the underwriting decisions in an orderly way, and that we provide a good way for underwriters to experience that. We talk a lot at Black Knight about what the customer experience needs to be, and how do you design an experience that's going to allow people to be satisfied in their job, allow very expensive underwriters to be efficient. But you also need to make sure that first point, that job satisfaction and user experience satisfaction, is central to how you plan so that you don't have as much turnover. So an underwriter is not willing to jump for that $20,000 bonus that some really desperate mortgage banker offers them when business is
really good. Yeah. There's so much of that going on. Alice, anything else real quick?
I love the term of how to show this to the underwriter, how to really make that underwriter experience better. I don't think a lot of people think about that, the individual. They just think about getting the work done and not minimizing and not making that experience better.
Yeah, so one of the things that's foremost on our minds is how do we make sure that the user experience is cohesive? Remembering that underwriting is not just about underwriting. Underwriting is about processing, too. Underwriting is about closing and post-closing, too. Because if the underwriter either makes a mistake or is slowed down or just simply doesn't do the job at the right moment, the whole process can come apart. And if we solve the problems that underwriters have, like the documents to data problem, and show the underwriter not only here's the data, but here's where the data came from. The provenance of the data is critical to the underwriter understanding that they can make a decision based on that data. So if we can do all that, we've actually already solved a lot of upstream problems. If we handle the documents and the underwriter simply presented with tax returns with the items that they have to underwrite to highlighted on the form, as well as tied into the income underwriting worksheet, guess what? They're going to make their decision faster and with more confidence. And by the way, by having done all that work, the processor didn't have to do anything. That came right off the paper.
That is really good. I like the providence of data. Alan, jump in here, please. I know you're down here in that same neck of the woods as Frank is. So we all jealous about the good weather you guys are about to enjoy.
Good to hear your voice again.
Likewise, Alan.
So it's funny, there's so many of us mortgage folks that live here in the same town, and none of us ever get together and see each other, only in airports and trade shows, which is funny. So we'll have to figure out how to change that soon. This is going back to my prior life. It's something I spent many years working on, extracting data, and it was all meant for underwriters. And then also everything you're talking about, showing the transparency of where the data came from. How many times is it persistent doc? Where is it wrong? I'm thinking you can maybe share with our listeners what some of the plans are, what you're already working on.
Sure. So we're working to launch our underwriting assist platform, which combines the features that we've talked about. We're expecting it to be ready for initial client release in January. And it combines what I consider to be the technology triad. It includes AI. It includes deterministic rules. And it includes a user experience. So David, you mentioned Shelley Leonard is our chief product officer, and Shelley and her team have developed a user experience foundation that we use in order to create the platforms that we provide to our most important users. In our servicing business, we have our servicing digital platform, and now we have our borrower digital and loan officer digital platforms launching right now. And as we started to design our point of sale, the Borrower Digital platform, we very quickly said we really can't design a solid experience for consumers without also designing a solid experience for the loan officers who work with them all day long. And so we built the two together. We didn't create a separate platform. They share the same platform. They share the same user experience. They share much of the same data. And that was intentional. By design, we wanted to make sure that the experience was cohesive. So that if a loan officer has to talk to a consumer, they're talking to the consumer and they can relate to what the consumer is able to do online. Not just co-browse, but it even looks the same. This interview questions are in the same order. The loan officer has flexibilities, the consumer doesn't, but they share an experience that helps them to work through the process. And what we learned through the process of building those platforms, we're now applying to the underwriting user experience. We also have on our roadmap a post-closing solution. Now, you might ask, why didn't we do processing first? Well, we were attacking post-closing because, to be quite honest, it's the idea of knowing what documents you have, knowing what data you have in the documents, having a workflow platform that allows for task-based work assignment, but it also provides visibility overall in order to do things like understand quality, connect into QC vendors, connect into investors, and basically deliver that final high-quality loan. Those are two things that we're building right now. The Underwriting Assist platform is very exciting because of the scale capability that it's going to provide to underwriters.
Yeah, you've talked about a triad. AI determinists, and what was the third thing?
The user experience backbone.
Yeah, and tying those together, there's a little art to that, really being able to do that. It was so fun. I found this old article that I was quoted back in 1986 about what is happening with AI. And I made a statement then that I could use to quote now, and that is, it's such a powerful tool. But are we going to see these tools put an end to the underwriter as a profession? What's your thoughts and perspective on this?
I don't see that. I don't see it that way. I see each of these tools as assisting the underwriter in making decisions in the complex world of humans. Let's face it, humans are chaotic. The idea that AIs can anticipate all of the change and all of the many options that could be presented when you start to underwrite a deal. And in the near term, and given the way that the investor community handles purchases and the way that mortgage businesses inside of banks handle portfolio lending and handle the niche kinds of lending that banks tend to do, all of those factors make for a very complex business. So AI, and we even call our AI, it's called AVA, virtual assistant.
I think that's the right perspective. It should be viewed as an assistant, all the technology tools. We're not getting away from that. Alice, I want to come to you.
Hi, Frank. Was there anything that jumped out at you when you started working with this virtual assistant concept and a user underwriter experience that you were surprised about that underwriters needed?
I think I was surprised most about the gap between the technology thinking and the business reality. So Black Knight has a tremendous amount of talent applied to all of these problems. And it's funny that as an industry, still struggle with everything from MSMO to whether or not in a given economic circumstance, a given kind of digital verification is going to work. It's that chaos between what actually is happening on the front lines of mortgage bankers every day and how their technology gets applied that we at Black Knight have been working on hardest, because it's a very significant challenge. The complexity of the industry is not to be ignored. If I have a few moments, a funny story. Yeah. I was with a technology firm in the early 2000s, and we were selling software. It was partly custom, partly not custom. It was a workflow and imaging platform connected up with a number of other systems, including capital market systems. And we were building out a correspondent lending platform. And the chief technology officer of our company was getting tired of a 4 hours long requirements gathering session. And we got to that 4 hour point, and he thought we were done. He said, "Okay, Frank, is that all?" And I said, "Yeah, but." And he got all upset. He freaked out. He said, "This industry's crazy. The industry's got all these non-linear decisions that we have to make. It's really nuts." This is a guy who worked on the launch control system for the space shuttle. He's somebody that has technology skills. So naturally, I said, "Greg, it's not rocket science." To which he said, my favorite quote of all time in the industry, to which he said, "No, it is much worse. It's either a launch or it's not a launch. Mortgage banking is way more complicated. So if you have anybody criticize our industry, you can tell them with authority that it's much harder than rocket science. So don't be critical that we're so slow at adopting tech."
there's one thing that you could think of for lenders on the technology side that you could say with what you're doing, how it really will help bring them to the next level? Is there anything that you'd want to leave them with?
It's off topic, but I'm actually very excited by our digital platforms, not only the digital point, the point of sale, our borrower digital and our loan officer digital platform, but our expedite close platform coupled with our latest acquisition, Doc Verify, our remote online notary solution. It's been fascinating. The demand for those platforms has been incredible due to COVID. But what I think the work that remains to be done by the industry is to really pay attention to leveraging that set of capabilities, knowing that you can with confidence deliver it to virtually everybody that you do business with. Of course, you have to check eligibility, like not only at the state level, but with your counterparties, with your investors. So making sure you as a lender prepare to be able to remain digital is something that I think everybody should be paying attention to while we wait to see if 2021 will be yet another record year or not.
Yeah, and I think there's more potential. You look at the demographics, you look at what's coming in. I'm very bullish in the mortgage industry, and I think no matter where rates go, you could kill it if it goes really too high. But I really think with as much uncertainty, it plays into lower rates. Yes, rates are rising right now, but we still have an overall very bullish market. I think you could have a better partner than Black Knight. You guys have such a great suite of products, but really beyond the products, it's the talent. And it's like yourself. In fact, there's one of our clients that says using Black Knight, and we're just so thrilled and really excited about the e-closing solutions, everything you're doing on the e-mortgage. But are you seeing a significant pickup? I mean, our 2.5 is the industry standard right now. Using your tools and technology, what do you see in underwriters' capability and capacity?
I would love to see the 10x lift that Joe talked about. I think that it's way too early to tell. Our underwriting assist platform, you know, we think is going to easily provide a multiple in terms of caseload. I think that, as I said earlier, it all depends on adoption by investors and agencies, and to be honest, by bankers as well. So we're going to have this continuum of underwriters who have to do a lot of manual underwrites, products that are more difficult to underwrite, and the ones that are really easy. So we're going to drive out the cost in doing the W-2 wage earner easy stuff pretty quickly. But remember, they're not the ones that cost us all the time. So we're actually trying to work hardest on the harder deals because that's where the real pickup will be. So we can take an underwriter who's a specialist in government lending or a specialist in private banking clients and double their productivity. That's where there's some real operating leverage.
Yeah. So much to look forward to. Technology is a big part growing. It's always been a big part for the mortgage landscape. It's even more so. I can't think of a better partner anyone would want to have than Black Knight because of all that you're doing. You have so many of my friends that work there. I could just go on and on. But you're very fortunate to join up with a great company, Frank. So grateful to have you on the podcast today, sharing your thoughts and some of the latest going on now that you're there. We're excited.
Thank you. Likewise. It's been fun and exciting. So I'm looking forward to joining you again for an update sometime soon.
I am. I'm looking forward to having you back for sure. Folks, we have had as our guest, Frank Poise. He's Managing Director of Product Strategy, Origination Technologies at Black Knight. Just one more outstanding executive joining an already outstanding team of executives with a real great vision. Pay attention to this company, folks. They've got some things dialed into the tools they have in their tool chest, or it's more like a war chest. It's going to be significant moving forward. Looking forward to having you back to the podcast next week. As we exit, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsor, Black Knight, as well as Finastra, as well as those Community Mortgage Lenders of America, as well as Indicom and Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility, RE Modex, and so many others. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, everybody. Forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.